Speaking Basketball Podcast. My name is Ben. Welcome back to another episode. And today, Cody is back. We're going to talk about some NBA hoops. I'm running on fumes. We just started the show. I didn't even realize consciously that we had started recording the podcast. What are we talking about today?
I think we're going to spend the entire time breaking down LeBron James's ascent to 40,000 points.
Stop it.
I think that was the plan for today, right?
Stop it. We're not doing that. We're not doing that. We're fresh off the heels of an Oklahoma City Thunder video. We talked about them last time. That was really interesting. It was really interesting to see the reaction to that. There are not a lot of believers in the Thunder. I was surprised at how low the general basketball community is on the Thunder, but they're fascinating because they're super young. As we got into in that video on the Thinking Basketball YouTube channel, that was a lot of fun. Do you have any thoughts on that? You're making a very pensive face. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I feel bad because I don't want you or anyone else to think that I'm contributing to that discourse, because it might have been on the last podcast where I was kind of throwing some rain on the fire of OKC, and I was like, hey, they're really young. Nobody this young is really ever successful. Besides, I think you brought up in the video, like the Walton Blazers in the 70s.
77 Blazers. In 77, they defeated the 76ers. So it does get a little confusing. But we've sorted it out.
But yeah, so I don't want to contribute to that discourse because I think OKC is extremely good. I'm just always a little bit more skeptical of those young teams. So I think in terms of how good they are, yeah, I think they're going to make a ton of noise in the offseason. But when we talk about in terms of, like, are they going to win a championship, I think that's where we were framing the conversation last time. Would I be surprised if they were in the finals? No. Would I be surprised if they were in the conference finals? Not even remotely. So wherever, like, that landing is, that's where I am with OKC. And I'm not really sure why, like, what other people's reasons would be for not being high on them.
And they don't believe in them. They don't believe they're too young. The role players aren't good, et cetera, et cetera. They haven't been proven. I understand it. You know who's not too young, Cody? You know who's not too young? The Boston Celtics.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Jason Tatum is still 19, of course, but everyone else. Is that an internet joke? Do people outside the internet know about the Jason Tatum is perpetually 19? I think the first Tatum video I made, he was in his 19-year-old season or something, and I referenced him being 19, but his birthday had happened, and some people got very mad at me that he had turned 20. And I was like, I know, it's his 19-year-old season. That's what I'm talking about. Anyway, the Celtics are not young. They have won 11 games in a row by, wait for it, the largest margin in NBA history, according to Basketball Reference. I think our friend Mike Lynch over at Basketball Reference tweeted about this at some point in the last 24 hours. They passed your Bucks, your Milwaukee Bucks, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's Bucks, as having the most dominant 11-game stretch in NBA history. They've won their last 11 games by an average of 491 points. I believe that's the rough estimate. Didn't they win by like 50 or 60 yesterday? It's been something.
I just pulled up the thinkingbasketball.net. You can sort it by how well teams are performing in the month. And you look at, like, OKC in the last month, they're like plus 8.6. Nice. Minnesota's like a plus 10. I'm like, that's a nice little, that's very a championship looking number.
Yeah.
Boston, man, in the last month has a net rating of 22.6.
Yeah.
22.6. That's what's happening. This is an unbelievable run they're on right now. And some of my Boston friends who are really throwing out some really high praise and, you know, kind of breaking the fan rules of saying, like, uh-oh, guys, are we just going to run through the playoffs? I kind of think some of that discourse is earned if you're the kind of person that wants to say that, because they are on an unholy tear at the moment.
So I think that we have to unpack this. We have to unpack this. I think the naysayer's argument to what's happening with the Celtics right now, first of all, they're very good, and they've been very good all year, and we will get into that in a minute. But just this last 11-game win streak, Cody, the naysayer says, look who you've beaten. You beat the Memphis Grizzlies by 40 points, and the Memphis Grizzlies are on the fringe of this bottom six, bottom-feeding, tanktastic, you know, sort of like pumping up all the win totals of everyone else in the NBA. And of course, Memphis has been devastated by injuries. And I actually find Memphis very fun to watch and exciting. And they have Gigi Jackson and all these other young players out there. But Memphis has not been very good. Portland has not been very good. San Antonio is not very good unless they're trying, unless they have Victor Wembanyama on the floor in the last 2 months playing center with a point guard. Who else is in that group? Did I mention Portland? Did I say Portland already?
Yeah.
I'm telling, see, this is the fatigue. I'm not even aware that I'm here right now. This is an out of body experience for me. But the Celtics beat the Grizzlies. There's another team in this list. The Wizards. The Washington, mm-hmm. Are they a basketball team? What's happening there? They actually only beat the Wizards by 4 points. But in this streak, they beat the Brooklyn Nets. The Brooklyn Nets, you could go either way on them. They beat the Nets by 50. You heard that. Don't, that's not 15, 50. They beat the Nets by 50. And the last night, I guess, yes, today's Monday, yesterday was Sunday. They beat the Warriors by 52. Beat the Golden State Warriors. Now, the Warriors didn't have a lot of players in that game, and it got really out of hand in the first half. I think it was like a 50-point lead in the first half. They beat the Mavericks, though, the game before by almost 30. So there is like a real win or two in there. You know, they beat the Knicks by 14. But I think the naysayer, Cody, says, okay, it's a plus 22 net rating. The offensive rating in the last month is 130. Like, that's all great. That's all fine and dandy. But it's mostly been against the bottom half of the league.
Well, I'm trying to think of, like, throughout the rest of the season, right? Because, sure, this winning streak, that's what's been happening. But apparently that didn't stop people from saying that the Bucks are all of a sudden title contenders, even though, like, in the last few games they beat the Hornets by a combined, like, 86 points across those three different games. So I think it's just tough to avoid some of these teams. I don't know why, but it just seems like, you know, teams seem to play the Pistons, the Wizards, all of these teams in like bunches, and there's sort of no way to avoid that. You play the teams that are ahead of you, and then some of those other wins, like beating the Mavericks, like the streaking Luka Doncic-led Mavericks who we talked about last time, beating them by 28, that's tough. Right, they're playing them straight up there. I think they have a Knicks win in there somewhere too. Really, just I know they don't have Julius Randle and they have some of their own injury issues. But I think what's interesting is they're going out in some of these big games and they have a specific strategy. Right, they go against somebody like Jalen Brunson, they go against somebody like Luka Doncic, and they're like, "Hey, look at the defenders we have. We're not going to blitz against any of this, right? Like, you want us to send a second defender. You want us to send somebody to there so Luka, you can throw your magic and you get Daniel Gafford on a lob or something like that. But we trust our guys to take you one-on-one. And even though you're going to put up some monster numbers, even though Jalen Brunson, you're going to go against the dropping Porzingis and just hit pull-up mid-range after pull-up mid-range, we're going to believe in our system and we're still just going to wallop you." And I think that belief in their defensive personnel and just like, this is how we're going to go out there and beat you consistently, I think that's the thing that stands out to me the most in some of these real wins that they've actually had.
So we have, we keep track on our board, patreon.com/thinkingbasketball. For deluxe members, you get player and team stats. When you look at the team board that Cody's referencing, you'll see performance versus top 10 and bottom 10 teams in the league. I mentioned earlier, like, these bottom six teams that are just inflating the win totals. So I was curious. I went and looked at, I said, get rid of those six teams. We don't care about Portland. We don't care about Washington. We don't care about San Antonio. We don't care about whoever else I said, Memphis. I'm forgetting the last one, whatever, right? Get rid of those teams. I want to see how you perform in the entire season against just the top 24 teams. Because last year in the NBA, we didn't have all these 15 and 67 teams. The Pistons, there's another one right there. We didn't have all those teams, right? We had, it was tough to get wins every night. Like, the 15th seed in the conference might be like 32 and 50 or something. It was really, really tough sledding, and the margin of victories were all compressed together. And we talked about this parity last season. But this season, I kind of wanted to see, Cody, if we just look at the tough games that you have to play throughout the year, even just trying to grind out wins against Houston and Indiana and Atlanta's of the world, like, what would the standings look like? What would the standings look like if we remove those bottom six teams from the NBA? Do I have your attention? Are you interested in this?
I'm genuinely interested in this because I do think some of these teams are inflated a bit by bottom feeding. So tell me, what does the league look like when we relieve? Well, apparently I'm brain dead too. What does it look like when we get rid of the bottom six teams, Ben?
Okay, so if we do this, the 10th best team in the league, like, there's a battle for 10th between like Philadelphia, New York, and Phoenix, and they're all around 500. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then if you start going up the standings, you get the Bucks, who are 27 and 19 against these top 24 teams. with a whopping plus 1.5 point differential. And then Denver is 30-19 with a plus 2 point differential. And we know the Nuggets, they just win games. They're always outperforming their point differential. So that's consistent here. It doesn't matter how you slice it and who they play. And then your top group of teams, your top six teams by record in this imaginary world where these six bottom feeding teams don't exist. The Los Angeles Clippers are 26-19. The Pelicans are 25-23, but they have a plus 3 point differential. The Cleveland Cavaliers are 27-20, but they have a plus 3 point differential. And then here are your top teams. Drum roll, please. We need a Cody basement. I'm not really in the basement. Drum roll. At number three, the aforementioned Oklahoma City Thunder. They're 32-16 with a plus 5 point differential when we get rid of all those bottom teams.
Okay.
Number two is the Minnesota Timberwolves. They are 29-17. They also have a plus 5 point differential. So the young Bucks looking pretty good. And I don't mean the Milwaukee Bucks. I mean the young kids in those cities that are blue and powder white. And my wife comes in all the time and she gets confused. And then she thinks Ja's playing for the Timberwolves. And it's a lot of fun getting all those blue jerseys mixed up. Blue is great in basketball, though. Carolina blue and Duke blue. And how did we get on blue? I don't know.
You're talking to the wrong person again.
That's right. I forgot.
So outside my purview.
I forgot. Yes. Cody, the top team is wearing green. Mm-hmm. The Celtics, when we put this filter on, are 41-11. They have a plus 11 margin of victory.
Oh, my God.
So there is some bottom feeding going on with them. There has been throughout the season. But they look really, really good. I think we mentioned it last time. If you compare records against top 10 teams, OKC and the Celtics look about even at the top of the league. So it's not like the Celtics have this historically great, when I look at the top 8 or 10 teams in the league, I have like a plus 8 or plus 10 point differential. They just look more like a vanilla number one championship contender. But as much truth is in this, there's also the robustness of their portfolio and their performance, which is like, yeah, we're just really, really good no matter how you slice it. They're first in offense. Ah, man, I wanted to ask you that. I wanted to ask you if you knew who was first in offense in the NBA. I'm answering my own questions again. Celtics are first in offense. They have the best offense in the NBA, and they have the second best defense in the NBA by points per 100 offensive and defensive rating. That is ridiculous. That is like the 96 Chicago Bulls going like, you know, hey, we might be the best offense and defensive team in the league. So in that sense, I think, you know, we might be talking about, at least regular season profile-wise, one of the best teams of the century. Every year, people ask me about working in basketball professionally or even how we add people to the Thinking Basketball team. And Sports Business Classroom is one of my go-to answers. And let me tell you why. It's professional, hands-on teaching from industry leaders and experts that sets you up to work in basketball. Alumni have gone on to work for multiple NBA teams, major media outlets like The Athletic, Clutch Sports, and more. This year's new lead instructor is ESPN's Bobby Marks, and the curriculum covers scouting, analytics, media, and the salary cap. The program is a 6-day immersive experience that takes place July 14th to 20th in Las Vegas during Summer League. And for a limited time, use the code THINKINGBASKETBALL for $600 off early bird registration. Interest is at an all-time high right now, and there are only 125 spots in the program, so you currently use Thinking Basketball at sign-up for $600 off that early bird price if you're interested at sportsbusinessclassroom.com.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
This is where I actually wanted to start with you. Because when we look at some of these indicators, right, we're looking at how successful this team is. We broke down in the sub-all-star episode. They have roughly between 5 and 15 sub-all-star plus players on the team. And depending on like how you view guys like Drew Holiday just moving over to the to their team, maybe they even like have higher level players than we're giving them credit for. But when you put this all together, what are the chances, Ben, that we're just kind of looking at like a 2014 Spurs situation where you kind of throw out the first round where they had like a weird situation with the Mavericks, but there's chances that they just rip through the playoffs. You know, they get to the finals and they beat down everyone. And then you look back and be like, oh, maybe we shouldn't have cared that they didn't have a top three player in the NBA. They're just so good and they have such a solid system that the playoffs are just going to be their chew toy. Like, do you think that this is kind of an inevitability that we are slowly rolling towards right now?
No, I don't think it's inevitable at all. But I also think what you described is totally in play. I mean, this is a team with a ton of experience. They have deep runs. They have that pedigree. They have a lot of talent. I mean, if you're nitpicking, I think there's probably two things that people are nitpicking that I hear. One is the three-point shooting and the offensive philosophy and style of the way they play. And the other is what you alluded to, which doesn't do it for me, but, you know, like, hey, Jason Tatum's not a top five player. He's very good. He's a top 10 player or something like that. But I mean, I want to feel more comfortable with, like, as I go through the playoffs, if I play the Clippers in the finals, is Jason Tatum going to be the best player on the floor, or is it going to be Kawhi Leonard? If I play the Nuggets, is it going to be Jason Tatum, or is it going to be Nikola Jokic? Who's the guy for the Nuggets who's very good? If I play Philadelphia, is it going to be Tatum or Embiid? Now, last year, does it matter? Because last year, Tatum and Embiid were out there. Now, maybe you could say Joel Embiid was injured for parts of that series, and so by virtue of that, he wasn't clearly the best player out on the court. But again, same thing, Milwaukee versus Boston, Tatum and the Bucks. Celtics obviously beat the Bucks last time they matched up in the playoffs as well. So I think that's a common argument that's put out there. Do you have thoughts on this? Because it just doesn't move me that much. I think your team, certain teams can be slightly better in the playoffs and slightly worse in the playoffs compared to the regular season. The Celtics are probably going to be one of those teams, but that doesn't mean they won't curb stomp the Eastern Conference in the playoffs and win the championship.
I think what's interesting is, you know, you brought up in the last 11 games or something like that, they've had the best 11 game run since 71. But in general, if you just look at their net rating, what their top five right now in net ratings of all time, like across the entire season, whatever it is, it stacks up against literally any other team that has played basketball. But what's interesting is you go down the list, right? You sort every team that's played by SRS, right? Just kind of, I think that weighs opponent quality a little bit more into the net rating and figures that all out. When you look at some of those teams, every single one of them that when you think about going through the playoffs and just dominating has like one of those sort of all-time players, right? You talked about the 71 Milwaukee Bucks. You know, you have Lou Alcindor there. You have the Bulls. You have Michael Jordan playing. You
Kareem with the Bucks. Yeah.
Yeah, what did I say?
You called him Big Lou. You went with the old name.
I did. Hey, man, we're going back into the time machine here. And where am I? Okay, so 2017, we got the Warriors, right? You got Kevin Durant. You got Stephen Curry. Michael Jordan, like I said. The Spurs are kind of the outlier where they sort of have the team concept and the way that they're able to move the ball and whatnot. And obviously, Tim Duncan in his later age. When you get down to like the 2021 Utah Jazz, like, that's a random team that you see pop up in, like, the top 20, 25 teams. And then you think, like, okay, Donovan Mitchell, maybe at that time, is he sort of viewed in the same way as Jason Tatum back in 2021? But then you look through the rest of the roster, and you're like, but this team isn't constructed like the Boston Celtics. So I think my point with this is I kind of get where people are coming from in terms of, you know, he does. There's not like a top five player on the team, but also I don't know how many other teams in history have as many quality starters as they have right now. Like if you look at like the sub all-star to all-star level players, I don't know, like you can count on one hand how many other teams have had this many guys. So I don't know. I think that would be my counter to it is just like, we've never seen a team that's this stacked with talent in one starting lineup.
Who was the Spurs team? What was the Spurs team that you were referencing with Duncan?
So 2016 Spurs is like top 10.
Yeah, this gets full circle back to why we are filtering the standings to start this episode and why I was interested in this. In 2016, you had a very top-heavy, lopsided, weird kind of league where you had the Warriors Then there's 73 wins, but they actually outperformed their point differential. So they were like a plus 10 point differential, which is all-time great. But the next year in 2017, they won 67 games and they had a better point differential. They had a better SRS. Mm-hmm. In 2016, you also had the Spurs, who had like a plus 10 point differential. And then like, oh, just like, hey, by the way, we're kind of pretty good. The Oklahoma City Thunder that year also had monster numbers, especially when they were all healthy. And that's one of the reasons why I asked, because for a filter like that, you might miss the 2014 Spurs, one of these egalitarian teams that didn't have a top 10 all-time player. Because I think the 2014 Spurs finished the regular season in like the plus 8 range. Mm-hmm. I'm doing this from memory, so if this is wrong, you can use the internet and correct me, or someone can yell at me. But I think it was like plus 8 in the regular season. But when you look at the games they actually played together as a unit, because there were some injuries, they were like all-time good despite not having that top 10 player. We've talked about the 2004 Pistons before. So I don't get quite as worried about like the ceiling that it puts on your team not to have an all-time great player, a top 5 player. That may very well be the case with this Celtics. But as you said, if you have 5 or 6 great players and they fit together really well and the system is humming, there's nothing stopping you from being much better than the opponent in front of you. And in the case of this season, we kind of know like they're in what looks like a much easier conference right now in terms of playoff path. And then they're going to have to play one Western Conference team in the final. They don't have to play 2 or 3 of the great Western Conference teams. So I meet a little bit in the middle where it's like, okay, it's fair to not put them up against the 96 Bulls, even if they have a great postseason. But they still look like they could absolutely run through the playoffs.
So I'm trying to think of a legitimate concern I might have. Like if we're trying to like weave our way into this needle eye and figure out the way for the Celtics to lose.
It's not the shooting?
I think actually to me the key is that Kristaps Porzingis is probably for my money the second most important Celtic right now. Like he is the key to how they both are able to play, like, you know, solid rim protecting defense and also stretch the floor from that five position, right? But you watch him defensively at times, and there's, you know, I'm thinking of a play. He's trying to spread out to Caleb Martin. I think they're kind of playing a zone concept against the Miami Heat, and he closes out on Martin. Martin just leaves him in the dust getting to the basket for a layup, right? Or the playing against the Pacers, and, you know, you have Halliburton driving in. He does this really slick behind-the-back pass to a popping Miles Turner, and there's, like, an entire ocean of space between them, and Turner drops the three. So when I see some of those, I'm starting to think, I'm like, okay, is there a way for a team to be able to scheme, to come up with some kind of offensive scheme where they can almost make Porzingis a weakness on the defensive end? And if a team's able to take advantage of this, and if a team's able to sort of nullify how valuable Porzingis is out on the team, and Porzingis has to sit more than the Celtics would want to, does that sort of take away the extraordinary advantage that the Celtics have? Now, I don't know what team it would be, and I don't know how they would counter it. I do think about, you know, going back to them, Oklahoma City, they have a big man that can pop pretty well. They have a bunch of guys that can get you on the perimeter and dance and take you to the basket. I could kind of see a situation where a team like that is able to use some of his weaknesses against him in a way that they lose that advantage. So to me, that's the weakness, if you were to call it that, that the Celtics have going into a playoff scenario.
I thought you were going to start with the low-hanging fruit of availability. And just like, right?
If this was weak.
It is weak, but it's also a very real thing. If you, let's take a step back. Let's play a fun game.
Okay.
Rank in importance the Celtics starters. Rank them in order of importance. Because if someone has a little ankle injury, or, you know, especially we've seen Porzingis in and out of the lineup, like, rank those guys in order of what they could fade for a couple games in a playoff series if someone's dinged up.
Okay.
Tatum is one, right?
I think this is going to make people angry.
Okay.
Right. I was kind of playing this game with some people. I'm glad you asked me that. This is great. So the way I think of it is if this guy is out that we're talking about, like, what do I still think their chances are of winning it all, right?
Yes.
Number one, Tatum.
Yep.
Right? They don't win the championship without Tatum.
Tatum's one. If Tatum goes down in a series for a couple games, especially if those games are on the road, they would probably do very well against a good opponent just to win one game. I think that's where I am with, like, who are you what's the lineup you're throwing out there? Do they have to go double bigs because of that? Would they start one of the guards? I mean, it's interesting because depth might be a real issue for them. That might be the next thing you were going to get to is depth. But let's stick with this thought experiment. Tatum's number one.
Okay. There's maybe a possibility where in a first round matchup, they could win like six games or something against the eighth seed, depending on who it is.
Yeah, the eighth seed, forget about it. They could beat the eighth seed with one of these guys out. Could they beat the eighth seed with Tatum out? Honestly, I could see it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's possible. Tatum's number one. Porzingis for me is number two. Okay. Derek White is number three for me. Drew Holiday is number four, and I have Jaylen Brown as number five.
Wow.
How do you feel about that?
I have Tatum as one.
Okay.
I kind of feel like I think White and Porzingis at the second and third position are very interesting. They're very, very interesting because you've been able to see this team. I don't have the numbers in front of me. We could get our stats department to pull them up on the fly in a second and double check. But like, what does the team look like when Porzingis is out and it's been these games where you still have Tatum, White, Drew Holiday, Brown, like most of those guys, and then Al Horford just slides into the starting lineup? Because a bunch of times I see them and they're healthy, and you get to see this entire glistening collection of stars that the Celtics have amassed that we've talked about earlier in the season. But sometimes you turn it on and it's like, oh, this is an Al Horford game. They have to downgrade all the way to poor old Al Horford, all-star veteran center who doesn't age. He has the fountain of youth. He has aged. He's a little bit older now. He's not quite where he was a couple years ago. But that's my first thought in terms of like, would I argue for Derek White second? And if you're not familiar with watching the Celtics this season, hold on. Do you have an update?
Yeah, someone's beaming
into our ear? Yeah, what are they saying? It's
going straight into my ear hole right now. So in 16 games that Porzingis did not play this year for the Celtics, the Celtics are 13-3 with a plus 10.8.
Okay. Yes.
I don't know who it is they played. They may have played the Pistons 16 times. So I don't know if it's a situation like that, but they clearly are very good in the games Porzingis doesn't play.
Yeah. So I mean, I think you can make an argument for White or Porzingis in that second position, and then of course, I assume you're anticipating wrath about your ranking Drew Holiday over Jaylen Brown. Is that correct?
Yeah, probably. I'm sure someone's going to be unhappy about it, but I don't dislike Jaylen Brown. These are five very good players. Like, we're talking about five sub-all-star plus players, and someone has to be fifth, man.
They are very good. It's funny. I was watching them yesterday and today and just thinking, like, we waffled so much on Drew. Did I make the right call? Is Drew really older? Has he lost a step a little bit? He makes a ton of great plays in these games. He's shooting 66% on corner threes. What's happening, Cody? Why is Drew Holiday shooting 66%? Now, okay, that's a small sample. They always leave that out on the broadcast. It's like 50 shots this year. But we looked up his last 300 corner threes over the last six seasons, and he's shooting 45 or 46% on those shots. So getting Drew to like camp out in the corner and finish some of these possessions has clearly been a nice little fit and value add for them just in terms of the offensive efficiency. We will talk about the three-point shooting in a second, though. We'll talk about the three-point shooting. I think if I had to do it, because of Al Horford's presence, I think I'd go Tatum 1, White 2, Porzingis 3. And then it gets really interesting because in the playoffs, would I rather have like Jaylen Brown and wings and winginess in the playoffs? I want to talk about their game against the Clippers in a second because it's one of the last games they lost back in January. It was an incredible game. But there were wings galore in that game. Sometimes you get these playoff series. You know what I'm talking about? You get these playoff series ever since the 2016 Warriors where it's just like everybody's 6'5 to 6'8. And if you're not, good luck. You better be Steph Curry because good luck. If you're like 6'11, you're too slow unless you're Jokic and Embiid and all those guys. And if you're 6'2 or 6'1, you're too small. And there's just a plethora of wings. Would I rather have Jaylen Brown's size? The thing is, the Celtics like to have Drew Holiday guard centers sometimes. So as physically strong as Jaylen Brown is, I think you're better off defensively off ball with Drew or switching onto big men with Drew or even Drew as a screener. They'll use Drew as a screener and he's playing that de facto, like, I'm a point guard, but I'm a center, Bruce Brown thing where you can get him the ball and he can handle. So I've talked myself into it. I'm going to go Drew 4, Jaylen Brown 5.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, I have 1 point. I need to fawn over Drew, like anytime he comes up, it's fawning time. But then I have to bring up a Jaylen Brown point. Drew Holiday, in terms of his strength, like they were playing the Mavericks. The other, he won by like 500 points against them, right? And he had a play that blew my mind, right? The Celtics are doing their little witchcraft out on the perimeter. And then Drew Holiday flashes middle, right? And he catches it. And what makes Drew Holiday so good in that position is he's a point guard. So he's very patient there. He catches it, and there's people all around. He's like looking around. He's like, all right, can I kick out here? Can I maybe make a move over here? Nope. Okay, all of my options are done. You know what option their guard, Drew Holiday, takes? He looks and he sees Luka Doncic behind him, who's a big dude, right? Like, I talk about Luka Doncic and maybe being better on defense, but like, regardless, he's a strong guy that is big. Drew Holiday bodies him, turns and posts him down, moves him to the basket, turns lefty hook shot, and makes it. I'm like, what is this nonsense? Like, your point guard flashes middle and posts up a guy that's like 5 inches taller than him, definitely heavier than him, and just bullies him into the basket. Like, this dude's just incredible. Like, that is some excellent work from Drew Holiday. I don't know if you want to comment on that, but I have a Jaylen Brown point I want to bring up.
I thought it was going to be a pass. I thought you were going to say I think in that game he had a beautiful backdoor pass read that he can make from that kind of like middle of the floor position. So, yes, make your Jaylen Brown point. I also am curious if you have anything about Jason Tatum and this whole best player MVP thing, because I want to talk later or in a second about the shooting and the offensive philosophy and what some of the X's and O's weaknesses might be, because that's the other thing we hear a lot criticized toward Boston. Can you criticize toward something? We're really having fun with the English language today. Cody, rescue me. Take it away.
I think what I've liked is we've set up like three different talking points in this, but I just need to talk about Drew here for a second. But like you said, he has a nice little pass because both he and White like are really comfortable just slipping themselves towards the basket, and they have a nice little chemistry and passing to each other, and they're both very nice at finishing at the basket. So I think that's where you see some of the passing, is you have your two guards that are just really adept at finding their way to the basket and making those cuts and stuff. Before we get to Tatum, we texted about this, Ben, but I don't know if you know how the Medium works, but the fan bases, the people can't read our texts. So I want to ask you live from Earth here, Ben. Jaylen Brown.
People aren't reading, but you and me, when we text each other, they're not reading those.
So those are not released to the general public.
Okay.
Like, it's not like
that explains Thinky a
Leaks.
Lot. Yeah.
Thinky Leaks, where everything's just out there for everyone to read. So I probably shouldn't. That's a sound. Okay. Anyway, so Jaylen Brown, last 5 years, this is a 5 year span of the regular season. I checked this like yesterday, so maybe their 50 point drubbing of the Warriors changed it. Over the course of the last 5 regular seasons, he has a negative net on off rating.
Oh, this
if
is.
If you look at the last 5 playoff years, the last 5 years of playoffs, he has like a -4 net on off.
There it is. The audience is getting excited because Dark Cody is coming out. Do it. Wet the blanket, Cody.
That scares me a little bit. But can you tell me, should I get out of the proverbial like nerd sheets, and should I just get on the court and realize that he's a real hooper? Like, what's going on with Jaylen Brown's on-off stuff?
Well, the thing that we need to contextualize, there's two things we need to contextualize here. One is historically, if that's your long-term signal and on-off, that is what we consider not good. That is no bueno. Okay, you do not want that. That is not indicative. That is not predictive of winning and going to places and winning basketball and things like that. So, you know, great players are plus 10, plus 12, whatever. Some good players are plus 5, plus 8. You want to be positive. You want to be better when you're not playing bench. That's very important in basketball. You want to be better when you're on the court. So that is part one to contextualize. Like, that overall signal, negative or just slightly above positive, those are problematic signals. What'd you say it was? Plus one, negative one, something like that?
It was like negative four in the playoffs and negative 0.5 or something in the regular season.
Negative 0.5 in the regular season, and I think if you change one of those years a little bit, it's like plus one. All right, so it's okay. right around neutral, okay?
Okay?
But the other thing to contextualize here that's really important to remember is he's playing on a really good team. So if you took a guy that was like one, his team was 1 point better when he was on the floor on a 500 team and compared him to a team that was 1 point better when he was on the floor for a 65-win team, the 65-win team player is usually going to be much, much better. So it's less about bucket getting and whatever you said earlier, real hooperism and whatever that is. Does that have a Wikipedia page we can look up and find out what that means? But like whatever that is, it's less about that and more about the fact that if you put him on a 30-win team, he would be by far the best player on the 30-win team, and he would probably have a positive on-off signal. And that's the point. Like, if you're plus 5 in the long term on a really, really bad team, that might be comparable to being like plus 1 on a team that wins 60 or 65 games every year. But that takes us full circle to him being what we think is the fifth most important starter or something like that. I think all of those are congruent points of view. Congruent? Everything sounds strange to me. I'm completely sober, by the way. This is just what happens when you don't sleep and watch basketball all day.
Drunk on the Celtics, Ben. That's where you are right now. Okay, so you're saying that maybe I shouldn't be too concerned about it. Jaylen Brown is a player that helps a very good team to a small degree. Probably bigger impact signal if he's on a smaller team. So, you know, the shooting, the score. Because, I mean, you watch him. You see the verve that he brings. Like, he, out of pretty much anyone, I think, on the Celtics, just brings like a, I got the ball, I got an inch of space, now I'm just going to drive it into your face and throw it down on you. A great in-game dunker, Ben. But then also like the shot making, like he's tremendous. He does the like flashing middle like Drew Holiday does, and he can make a really nice little step back. But, you know, then there are times where I kind of see where the numbers aren't loving him. You know, he's got a couple players flying by him. He's like, pump fake, defender goes by, pump fake, defender goes by. And Derek White's like one pass away. And like Isaiah Hartenstein's coming out to close out on him. And he's like, you know what? I'm going to take the contested three instead of passing it. And I see some of those kinds of plays a little bit more. I'm not saying Jaylen Brown can't make the beautiful game passes because he's definitely involved with some of these possessions just fine. But I do think that, especially when you're surrounded with such good talent, maybe the one-track focused, I'm going to score this, I'm going to make a tough shot, takes a little bit more off the table as opposed to if you were on a worse team.
To me, you're talking about all the little stuff. I think we did an entire podcast episode about this last year. Might have been during the Who Could Be the GOAT series. I can't remember. But it's just like we talk about scoring and playmaking and rim protection, but what about setting screens, loose balls, cutting, little in-between plays, where to move your body, how fast you run in an opportunity? And it's funny because I've mentioned this Clippers game. One of the negative notes I had coming out of the Clippers game for the Celtics was there was a play where the Clippers were like trying to switch behind the play or something to avoid a screen. I can't exactly remember what the heck was going on, where the ball was. But basically what ended up happening is on the other side of the court where Jaylen Brown was, you had Brown and you had Drew Holiday. And one of them, basically Brown, should have cut into the open space where the Clippers were like flooding and overloading on the ball side. And not only did he not do that, he might have been complaining to the official about something instead. And it's like, that is a very subtle thing that is incredibly difficult to detect, where every time you see the player do it, you forget that a player has to do it. Because what you process as you watch the game is you process like Tatum's double teamed, throws it to the wide open guy in the paint, he gets a layup. There's no wide open guy because Brown never cuts because he doesn't recognize the cut. And it's those little things that I think you're getting at where you have like, how do you explain, you know, very talented basketball players who are very good at these big things. It goes back to like 22 finals with ball handling and some of his ball security or lack of passing. That stuff just starts to add up over time. I want to talk about the three-point shooting, though. We've teased it long enough. That is the one I hear most. The Celtics shoot too many threes. Okay? And the Celtics make a ton of threes. They make a ton of threes. Do you know what team in NBA history, Cody, has made the most threes per game in a season? Do you know that? I'll give you a hint. We've talked about them on this show.
Oh, is it the 2024 Boston Celtics?
You're so close. It wasn't a trick question. It's the 2021 Utah Jazz.
Oh.
Yeah. They made 16.7 threes per game.
My other guess would have been like the 2018 Rockets, but that makes sense.
They're up there too. 16.7 threes per game from the Jazz. The Celtics are third all time right now. Hmm. They're making 16.5 threes a game as of recording this. They are third all time. Now, here's my trivia question for you, my friend. And everyone out there can play along. I didn't mean to be restrictive.
Nope, none of you can play. This is just for me.
Okay, all right.
I'm listening. Don't you dare whisper it in the car. This is just for me. Okay, what? Go on.
No one tell Cody the answer. What NBA champion has made the most threes per game during the regular season? And how many threes did they make?
I'm going to guess the 2016 Cavaliers. And I'm going to guess that they made like 13 a game.
The number is 14.4.
Okay.
And I think you had a 50-50 chance when I gave you the heavy hint that this was only for you. It's not the Cavs. It is the 2021 Milwaukee Bucks. NBA champion during a season has made more threes than the Milwaukee Bucks. They made 14.4. So it's a pretty big jump up to the Celtics, 16.5. 14.4 to 16.5. Now, with that said, this might be part of the sort of final stage of the pace and space revolution, of this shift toward three-point shooting basketball and spacing and just getting so much skill on the court that now you need a Chet Holmgren-type center to win. You can shoot and pass and dribble and attack closeouts and defend and block shots and hit scoops under Wemby's arm and buzzer-beating threes against the Golden State Warriors. And sorry, what were we talking about? Where was I?
Heard Wemby. That's all I heard.
That guy's good. Listen, this is the point I'm making. Ten years ago, the Warriors became the first NBA champion ever to make 10 threes in a game. Did you know that?
No, I actually didn't. That's interesting.
The record before that was 8.7. The 2015 Warriors made 10.8 threes in a game. Charles Barkley, of course, famously said they couldn't win if they took a lot of threes. And then we went higher. We went up to 12 with the 2017 Warriors. And then we went up to 12.4 with the 2019 Raptors. And then your Bucks jumped it to 14.4. So now we might, you know, is it going to be 16? Is that in the range? Is that in the ballpark? So I say, people say the Celtics take too many threes. You have high variability. That means you get stuck in a series. And what might happen? You might have a bad shooting night, right? You might have two bad shooting nights. We've seen this before. The Rockets and their 27 straight misses. And I do think there's some validity to that, Cody, because when the game gets dialed up, the intensity gets dialed up, making shots around the basket, making mid-range shots, making free throws, and finishing your drives with your skill and athletic advantage, I think all of those things are a heck of a lot easier and less fatiguing than taking 35 or 45 threes and making them at a good percentage. Do you buy that theory?
I feel like it's actually less taxing to jack up a lot of threes, because then it's the actual drives into the paint and the physicality when you get down there that's going to make you tired. Like, I'm thinking back to playing basketball, and it's like sometimes you're like, man, should I try and drive this or should I just pull up right now? And sometimes pull up just hits you when your legs are tired.
The difference, I think, is in these playoff games and these settings, and it happened in this Clippers-Celtics game that I've alluded to, the game gets very intense and very physical everywhere. So you're eating up your legs on defense right? It's not just about being what's the word, like lazy on offense, like you were alluding to your pickup games where you just want to shoot threes instead of drive. And what I'm saying is when you're Russell Westbrook at your peak and you make your money driving to the basket and applying rim pressure, that does not get derailed if you also are an intense game where the game's physical and you have to defend and you have to fight through screens. When that intensity gets dialed up, I think you are more likely, I'm just throwing this out there, it's a hypothesis, I think you're more likely to have these games where you have like dead legs and it's really hard to make threes. And in that Clippers-Celtics game, that was a sort of rock fight. That game was a brouhaha. It was back and forth and it was physical. I think I texted you the score at one point. It was like in the third quarter. It was like 55-38 or something in the third quarter. We're getting Pistons Pacers 2004 flashbacks from that game. And the Celtics run some plays and they get some good looks. And what happened on like every one of those looks? Short. The three was short. You can start rushing because you're like, ah, we haven't gotten an open three in like 10 minutes, right? I think there's some theoretical basis for that argument. And I just wanted to acknowledge it, okay? Just want to throw it out there and acknowledge it. We obviously saw the 2018 Rockets. A lot of these three-point shooting teams maybe are vulnerable to that. I mentioned the Jazz, the 2021 Jazz. They didn't have that problem. They were upset by the Clippers in the second round, but they shot the lights out. They shot the leather off the ball in the first round. I think they're over 40%. In the second round, they might have been even better. They made, I think they made like 23s a game, 19 or 23s a game in that series against the Clippers. It was incredible. So just because you're a three-point shooting team and you lose doesn't mean that's what's happening. I wanted to acknowledge that theory. And the reason I wanted to acknowledge that theory is because I have another trivia question and everyone can play along this time. Okay. And that question is, the Boston Celtics, they've lost 11 games this year. Okay, let's put that into perspective. Or 12. Is it 12? 48 and 12? Whatever. I think it's 48 and 12. Yeah, 48 and 12. They've lost 12 games. When they have shot 30% or worse from three-point range this season, 30% or worse from three-point range, they've done it 17 times. What is their record in those 17 games? When they shoot 30% or less from three-point range, what is the Celtics' record in those 17 games?
Can I just tell you how many times I think they lost?
Go for it.
I think they lost 6 times.
I think so. You think they're 11 and 6?
Yes, I think they're 11 and 6.
The correct answer, when the Boston Celtics shoot 30% or less this season, is that they have gone 14-3. They are 14-3 when they shoot 30% or less. They are 7-1 when they shoot 25% or less. Now we're going to flip it around. When the Celtics have, this is fun. When the Celtics have shot 40% or better this season, they've done that 19 times. 40% or better from three. What's their record?
They've done it 19 times.
19 now, times, yeah.
Now we get nervous if they lost, let's just say four. Cherry the four. I'm going to say they lost 5 times.
They are 13-6 when they shoot 40% or better. They have a significantly better record when they shoot 30% or worse from three than when they shoot 40% or better. And when they've been hot, they've had 8 games where they've shot over 45% from three. They're 4-4. You're looking at me like it doesn't make sense. Yeah, it doesn't make sense. Let me just double check that this isn't their opponent shooting.
do you have...
I have it in front of me. I literally have it in front of me, yeah.
If this is the case, do you...
Yeah, it's 100% their opponent shooting. I pulled the wool over your eyes the whole time.
So it's actually reversed. Like, they have lost the majority of their games, when their opponents are shooting a lot better.
Yes, the Celtics are 26-1. The Celtics are 26-1 when they shoot over 40%, Cody.
Oh my god!
Yeah, they're 26-1 when they shoot over 40%.
This makes me feel a lot better. I was like, do they just, can they feel it? They just ramp up the defense? Like, do they just turn into the Russell Celtics? Like, is that what happens? This makes me feel a lot better.
They're 26-1. Would you like to guess their record, their real record when they shoot under 33%?
Okay, let's. How many losses? Wait, no. How,
it's how,
how many games?
It is 17 games.
Okay, I'm going to stick with six still.
They're 7-10.
Hey, okay.
So I think there's some credence. I think there is some credence to this idea that if they have a couple bumpy shooting games in a series, you could drop two or three of those games. We've seen this in the past. We saw this against Miami last year. You know, we talked about luck a ton with the Heat, mm-hmm. the focus on the Heat, not the Celtics. But there was a component with the Celtics where as the Heat were making shots, the Celtics were actually missing shots at a greater deviation than what you'd expect than the way the Heat were hitting their shots compared to average. So, you know, I don't know what to make of all this. I don't know what to make of all this other than to say I think each of these points has a little bit of validity and might be something to consider. And then I have a final thought about their X's and O's.
Well, something that I think might be a little bit of hope. It makes it sound like this is the most dire situation ever. Like, the Celtics are going to lose. Did you know that they lose games when they don't make threes? But when you look at, like, obviously the shot chart is a pie. There's only so much that you can do. You can't equally, like, get to the rim the most and get to the, it just doesn't work out that way. Something has to give at some point. So they're like 25th in rim frequency in the NBA right now. Okay, so it's quite low, right? They're near the bottom in the league and actually how what percentage of their shots are at the rim. But if you look at rim field goal percentage right now, they're third in the NBA, right? They have the third highest efficient offense at the rim. And so when I think about that and I think about a playoff scenario, this tells me, and you know, it stands out when I watch, when Jason Tatum puts his head down, he gets an isolation, he starts dancing a little bit, goes in. He's a solid driver. He's strong. He throws down on people. He's got a nice touch. We talked about Derek White and Drew Holiday. They can cut, get to the basket, score that way. Peyton Pritchard, he doesn't take a lot of shots at the rim, but he likes to do his little gnashing stuff. Like, he gets into the paint and can kind of stir the drink and cause some stuff to happen. Part of me wonders that if the three-point shot isn't falling, and maybe this is too much of an in-game adjustment, the Celtics might be able to adjust in a playoff setting where it's like, okay, let's try and get to the basket more. And if they do, it shows me that they have enough juice that they're efficient when they get there. So maybe they can adjust a little bit more if the chips are down. That would be my one counter to the whole three-point shooting thing.
I have another counter to the three-point shooting thing, which is, if you get good shots, I mean, they're making like 40% of their threes as a team, right? Mm-hmm. So they're getting good shots. You just said it. When they're at the rim, they're shooting very well. They're a good shooting team. And so the shot quality is really good. So wouldn't you want more of that? Wouldn't you want, like, if a team's going to protect the paint and you kick it out and you have a wide open three from a 40% three-point shooter, that's really good offense. That's why they have a 130 offensive rating in the last month. So if there comes with that some inherent additional variability or risk, I mean, then so be it. But they've constructed an elite team this way, and they've constructed a dominant team that, you know, is somewhere between like championship favorite and crushing the league all time historically good in the regular season. And so the counterpoint statistically on the 3-point shooting to me is, they lead the league. I was going to ask you another question, but I've asked you too. I've used up my quota. I've used up my allotment. They lead the league in open 3-point attempts per possession or per 100 possessions. 86% of their threes are open or wide open threes. 86%. So when you look at that, you're like, okay, getting a lot of open shots is good. Now, part two. Who leads the league in open three-point percentage when the defender is at least 4 feet away? The Celtics. So they're getting the most open threes, and they're the best open three-point shooting team in the league. And when you watch the offense, this is the X's and O's piece for me, Cody. They've been criticized before for maybe being a little too reliant on like a five-out drive and kick, or maybe too vanilla with the X's and O's. We run some basic pick-and-roll stuff, but what I see more of this year is we're going to throw it to Kristaps Porzingis at the elbow and run a three-man splits game like the Warriors used to do. So we're going to have two guys cutting off each other. If that doesn't work, they can flow into handoff action with Porzingis. If that doesn't work, we can send a screener into the corner and bring up a fourth guy and have the other guy cut through. There's a little bit more dynamic action going on in the offense. Heck, the other day, the game against the Lakers, the other LA TNT game they played last month in February, they opened the game and they threw Drew Holiday down in the post like Draymond Green, and they ran the split action out of the post to pass off of Porzingis. They get a backdoor Jaylen Brown dunk because Drew Holiday is a very good passer. So they're I think from an X's and O's standpoint, they've expanded the offense a little bit. We've talked before about Porzingis and the dimension he adds, both as a spacer and pick and pop guy, but also, hey, if you want to switch, then we go to the post. And even with Porzingis, he's a pretty good cutter and like slicer and crasher. So we can run him off screens and stretch that way. So I think they've sprinkled in enough and added enough that for the most part, the shot quality is phenomenal. And that's why their offense is so good. That's why they have the best offense in the league. That's why they have all these numbers. We know the defensive talent and the defense is great. And by the way, tip of the cap for everything they do defensively, keeping Porzingis low, switching rim, you know, zones with Drew Holiday in the middle of the court. So it's the complete package there. And all we've really done for the last hour is try to like find little weaknesses in the armor where you can make an argument that there's some vulnerability. And I do think watching that Clippers game is instructional because it wasn't just a bad shooting kind of loss thing. It was what happens if we have really big wing defenders that can take away your penetration. And now you don't get the defense in rotation on that drive and kick game that they're so good at. Now you don't force a third defender to segue over and help. And now it's like, hey, Drew Holiday's open in the corner for that 66% three that he's hitting this year, that 45% long-term three. The Clippers they had a really fascinating defensive night. Paul George was dominant. He's a big 6'9 wing. You have all these big wings you can throw in different directions. That might be the legit way to sort of take away or defang what the Celtics bring to the table. And it goes full circle back to your point about not having like maybe a top five player in the league. I think I'll be more specific. Jason Tatum is a great player to me. I think I have him in my top 10 most years. He's a very good defender, which means offensively, he's not a top five offensive player in the league in my mind. He's probably not a top 10 offensive player. I don't know. I don't make a list. I can't think of it off the top of my head. But maybe that's the thing with the Celtics, that if you have a defense and you have a defensive performance like the Clippers put forth in that game, how does Boston pressure you? How does Boston stress that kind of defense? Because they're like, hey, Kawhi, Tatum, would you like to be guarded by Kawhi Leonard? Oh, no. What about Paul George? And also we'll have a third player behind you eating up passing lanes. So you have to make critical passing decisions. And Tatum, as much as he's improved as a playmaker, it's very, very impressive. He's a pretty good playmaker. You put him in that environment and you can still get wins defensively because he's not going to pick you apart when you show him different bodies, different looks, different crowds. He missed plenty of passes in that game, and making those passes would have punished that defensive approach. So I don't know. That's my thought on Boston outside of like, what did we say at the beginning of the show? they're 41-11 against all the real teams in the NBA.
And I think, honestly, like the premise, I don't know if people are screaming this as they're listening to this all, because we just talked a lot about their offense. To me, their dominance and potential dominance in the playoffs is predicated more on their defensive potential than their offensive potential, right? When I look at this team and I look at the other teams in the NBA, I'm surprised that they have the best offense in the league. I am. And I don't think that's a knock against Boston. There are just some really good offensive teams and players in the rest of the league. And I just didn't quite see this group coalescing into that. I would have expected them to have, like, if you had come in at this point and been like, this is actually going to be the best defense we've ever seen in the NBA, I'd be like, sure. But I do think that is what can be dialed up in the playoffs. So I know Rob Williams isn't there anymore, and I know he was a key part of, I think, a lot when we were talking about the run in 2022 to the finals. A key part of that was getting him off ball, being able to roam by the basket, and they don't have somebody that's that lethal as a rim protector right now. Kristaps Porzingis is a good rim protector, but Rob Williams kind of brings a different juice to it. And so if the offense does get stagnated a bit, they run into a Clippers team that's able to slow him down a bit, I don't think anyone can ratchet up the defense quite like this carousel of defensive demons that the Celtics have. So to me, that is just the main hat hook upon which their championship hat may be hanging.
You know what's really fun when you're cognitively impaired like I am right now? You do an entire hour-long podcast and you forget to do the main topic that you wanted to do. That's that's where I find myself. We'll have to save that for another time. I was gonna talk about defenses around the league and officiating and things like that. And yeah, I can't read my own handwriting. That's what, even though it's typed right in front of me on this machine, can't read my own handwriting. Yeah. If you want to support the show, check out patreon.com/thinkingbasketball. That's where we have the stats leaderboard that we mentioned for teams and players. We have extra content sometimes, a Discord community, and a ton more. Cody, you were going to add something insightful before I escaped and got out of here.
I really wasn't. I was going to open up another topic that we were probably going to talk about, but I realized that that's honestly another 45 minutes, so... You know, I didn't even bring it up.
Can you tease it? Can you let me know what this topic is about? Should we do it next week? What is it?
It's an acronym that the best players in the league vie for every year. Whether or not they're
stats. They just retired his number in Phoenix. Amari Stoudemire. Yes.
Is this why every time I'm watching the Suns on League Pass that they give me some like highlights of Stoudemire dunking?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Oh.
Yeah. They match that up. Like whatever's going on, they'll give you somebody's birthday, they might give you a highlight package of when he was a kid or something. Yeah.
Honestly, this has been, I don't know if I just haven't been watching a lot of League Pass as much, or I haven't been paying attention to the commercials or whatever else, but when they play these like old school highlights, old school 10 years ago, 15 years ago, when they play these highlights, it makes me happy. I'm like, this is a cool commercial break. I don't want to get up. I don't want to go use the bathroom. I want to watch Dominique Wilkins throw up some of these layups. I want to watch Amari Stoudemire pick and roll and yam it on someone's head. This is a good move by the NBA. I approve.
My only nitpick is that they put the little game break thing in the corner. So, yeah.
Wait, what do you not like about that?
Anyway, let's get out of here. Let's end the show. That's it. That's it for this one. Maybe next time we'll remember actually how to do the topic that we wanted to do. And it's okay. I'm going to sleep. It's okay. I'm going to sleep, but I'm going to get back on course, and we're going to be okay. Everything's going to be good. Thanks for listening to this one. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope it was worthwhile. Hope Dark Cody didn't go too negative on the Celtics there. The team that has like one of the five best point differentials in NBA history. What does Basketball Reference's model give them to win the title? 60% odds?
Yeah, it's something like that. I don't think I was that negative. I'm pretty high on the Celtics team.
Okay.
I think this
I'm pretty high on them as well. I'm trying to poke holes in them because they are a seriously impressive, well-balanced team. And the takeaway for me is I just got to get to the playoffs. I got to see it in the playoffs. I'm excited to see it in the playoffs. The playoffs need to start next week, Cody. That is it for this one. Thanks, as always, for listening, and hope you're having a great day.